What's that? Okay, if people could come in and take their seats, we'd like to get started so that we can keep somewhere close to schedule. Well, it's getting quiet, but I'm not. Are there more people out in the hall who are coming in? Okay, I think we'd like to get started, please. If I could have your attention. Thank you. This is the Yali Presidential Address. I'm Hank Farber, and I have the distinct honor today of introducing the speaker. I want to start by saying that I've been on leave this past year, and one of the highlights of my leave, frankly, maybe the highlight, was getting to know and spend time with Christian Dustman while we were both visiting at Harvard in the fall. We spent considerable time together talking about economics and, frankly, life in general, an activity I hope was half as profitable for him as it was for me. And while Christian surely needs no introduction to this group, it's worth saying a few words here. And these words will be mostly about the economics, not about his former career as a motorcyclist or a deep sea diver. Christian received his PhD from the EUI in Florence in 1992 and joined the faculty at the University of Bielefeld in Germany, where, as far as I can tell, he grew up. He was an undergraduate there. He did some graduate work there. But after a couple of years in Bielefeld, he moved to UCL in London in 1994, where he's remained on the faculty for the past two decades. Christian is a research associate of the big London economics groups, including CEPR, IFS, CEP, sort of a mouthful of acronyms. Christian's also a fellow of the German National Academy of Sciences, and he served as president of the European Society of Population Economics. He's currently serving a three-year term as president of the IALI. Christian is the founding director of the Center for Research and Analysis of Migration at UCL, the analysis of which CREAM pays homage to the kinds of 60s, 70s heavy rock groups that Christian is fond of. Big Eric Clapton fan. More seriously, CREAM is a manifestation of Christian's sustained interest in important research on problems of migration and immigration. His substantial body of work covers virtually all aspects of migration and immigration. Among other topics, this includes work on determinants of immigration and migration, the labor market outcomes of immigrants, and the effect of immigrants on destination economies and labor markets. Perhaps not surprisingly to anyone who knows Christian, this work has put him, not always comfortably, in the middle of the policy debate over immigration. While we were at Harvard last fall, there was quite a brouhaha in the UK over some work that he had done, claiming that immigrants actually weren't all bad for the UK. Christian's, while he's best known for his work on migration and immigration, and he's certainly one of the world's leading scholars in this area, but he's written on many other topics as well. Some of these include wages, wage dynamics, crime, education, labor supply, and peer effects. But the hallmark of Christian's work on any topic is an elegant formalization and empirical analysis of an interesting problem of great policy relevance. His work is clear, convincing, and creative. How's that for alliteration? And he's made important contributions to the areas in which he has worked. It's been my great pleasure and privilege to get to know Christian personally and to count him as a good friend. There is nothing more interesting for me than to, quote, have a coffee, unquote, with Christian and talk economics and life. Without further ado, I give you Christian Dustman.
Okay, well, what should I say? Let's all go home now. Thank you very much, Hank. When I started my PhD, I chose a topic which at that time was, according to many people I talked to, a complete killer for any kind of academic career, and that was the economics of migration. That has changed dramatically, I think, over the last decade, not only here but in many other meetings. I'm meeting many young people working on migration, doing excellent work on migration, and pushing that area into completely new directions, and I think that is really great. So I chose migration as the topic I would like to talk about here, and in particular the economics of temporary migration. That was something I got interested in when I started working in this area, and it's at the same time becoming a field which is very lively with many new interesting research developments. Now, I have two possibilities here to move the slides. The one didn't work. Let's try this one. So before I start, let me kind of acknowledge some people on whose joint work I'm drawing here, Jerome Adar, Simon Gorlach, and Joram Weiss. What I'm going to present here is kind of a merger of three recent papers, two of them being surveys. Now, the economics of migration, those of you who have been in the field some of you have been in the field for longer, many of you have been in the field for less long, but when I started in this area, the dominant research on the economics of migration was to consider migrants as nothing else than the factor labor, usually in trade models or general equilibrium models, who were kind of moving around and responding to price differentials. Now, in such settings, migrants were basically completely passive and didn't make any decisions. That changed in, I would think, the mid-late 70s, in particular with an important paper by Barry Chiswick on the earnings dynamics of immigrants, and was followed by a lot of work, in particular by George Borchers, but many others as well, who looked at migration from a completely different perspective than the literature has done so far, from a micro perspective, from a perspective of in the tradition of labor economics, trying to understand the career profiles of immigrants in those countries to which they had chosen to emigrate. Now, one thing which was kind of remarkable for me, working on migration from the German perspective, where migration was always considered to be something temporary, was that all that literature considered migration actually as permanent. And I believe one important reason for that was that it's incredibly difficult to measure the temporariness of migrations, and everything which is incredibly difficult to measure, we tend in a way to ignore as economists. We have made dramatic progress in this area over the last years, and I think that is one reason why that field has grown quite substantially. So what I want to talk about here today is to kind of convince you that what I believe is the temporariness of migrations being a very important factor to consider when we study all aspects of immigrant behavior. To just give you some evidence on that, so this is data from a mega, Meta study, where we kind of put together research done by many other people and try to kind of extract from the numbers we see in about 20 different papers some kind of regularities about out-migration of immigrants who immigrate into different countries. We distinguish here between the New World, the classical immigration countries, US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe. And what you see here is that basically after 10 years in the case of the Anglo-Saxon countries, about 20% of immigrants have left the country again. In the case of Europe, the numbers are higher, about 50% have left the country again. The OECD has come up with numbers which kind of suggest that for most Western countries, after about 10 years, half of the population of an incoming cohort has left again. We have done, together with Joram Weiss, some work on LFS, Labour Force Survey data for the UK, where we spliced together different cohorts of immigrants and used the representativeness of the Labour Force Survey together with information about the year of arrival to get some grip about the temporariness of migrations to the UK. Well, from that data, we found that after about 5 years, only 60% of a cohort is still in the UK. There is substantial heterogeneity across different groups. We distinguish in the second graph, just as an example, between immigrants, which we consider as white or non-white. Non-whites would include individuals from Pakistan, India, the Caribbean, etc. And you see already that there is substantial heterogeneity, substantial differences in the survival of those two groups, with non-white immigrants having much larger survival probabilities than white immigrants. So temporariness, indeed, a big issue. Many migrants return, and many migrants return after relatively short periods of time. Now, that has to have some impact on their behavior. Well, it affects, first of all, of course, the composition of the migrant population. If this out-migration is random, we will not have to worry about it. But if it is not random, then it may induce the traditional and standard selection problems, and I will talk about that a little bit in a minute. But if the way of out-migration is in any way determined by a decision process, so if individuals decide whether and how long they want to stay, and if these decisions are not just related with the optimal migration duration, but if they are also related to other determinants of behavior, such as human capital investment, such as consumption, etc., then this may create a dynamics which is probably very complex, and the most part of this talk, I will talk about that. Now, to give you an idea how we can think about that, consider this very simple diagram. We have a migrant entry cohort. For instance, migrants who came in 1990 to the US. So these individuals make decisions. They invest in human capital, which has an impact on their earnings profiles. They consume. They supply labor to the labor market, etc. As economists, we will observe the outcomes, and we will relate them to a set of variables which are determinants of these outcomes. For instance, we will estimate standard Mincer wage equations, and that was, in fact, one of the first papers in this tradition of literature, the paper by Barry Shiswick and George Borja's papers, which looked at earnings of immigrants as well. Now, suppose now we have out-migration, And suppose this outmigration is in some way selective. So it will therefore change the composition of the entry cohort. So over time, immigrants will outmigrate, and this outmigration may be selective. It is very unlikely to be in any way of random nature. So the way I have drawn this in this very simple diagram is that immigrants emigrants, individuals who leave again, are selected from the lower part of the distribution. That means the earnings distribution which we observe will be increasingly truncated. Just to give you an example in this second diagram here, which I will make a little bit larger, suppose we look at the cohort of immigrants who come at time C, and we have two census waves to observe them, T1 and T2. Suppose, just as an example, migration is negatively selective, so individuals who are leaving are drawn from the lower part of the earnings distribution, and this selectivity increases over the migration duration, then the earnings profiles, which we will estimate, will be kind of represented by this dotted line, and they will be an overestimate of the earnings profile of the original arrival cohort. We know how to deal with these problems under certain assumptions. So, for instance, if we assume that immigrants are selected on unobservables which are constant over their life cycle, we can estimate this with simple fixed effects estimators. If we make assumptions about a less systematic type of selection and we have the data available, this is something we actually can deal with as economists. Now, just one very small footnote. Not always are we, of course, interested in the dotted line. Very often, we may be interested in the solid line, which is basically the earnings profile of immigration, which includes the changes in the composition of the migrant population. For instance, if we are interested in the contributions immigrants make to the fiscal coffers, we are not interested in those who may have left already. We are interested in those who are actually staying. But let's just try to think about us trying to regenerate the counterfactual distributions in case how they would look like if outmigration would not have happened. Now, this is an issue which we can address, as I said, with standard methods we have available. However, let's just come back to our initial diagram, and let's think about outmigration as something which is in some way not completely exogenous to the process of decision-making and outcomes. Outmigration is usually the outcome of a decision problem. So individuals choose whether they want to return, they choose whether they want to outmigrate, or they choose whether they want to migrate to another country. If that choice of temporariness, which will always affect the composition of the migrant population, will also affect decisions of individuals. So if I decide, for instance, to stay in the UK for only 3 years and my native language is not English, then I may not bother to acquire English language capacity. But if I want to stay 10 or 15 years, then this is a very different matter. So what we have actually is a slightly more complex problem. So in a setting like this, where the choice of temporariness is also affecting decisions and not just outmigration, simple selection models of the type I mentioned a little bit earlier will not be able to deal with this problem. Now let's make that a little bit more complex, and let's introduce stochastics. Outcomes are affected by stochastic shocks. If, for instance, we have a situation where immigrants go to a particular country to accumulate a stock of savings, to then return and start investment into business or into housing, etc., then stochastic shocks to outcomes, stochastic shocks to earnings may backfire in some way on the choice of the optimal duration of stay. So they get a positive income shock, they can achieve their target earlier, and they return earlier. That will then, of course, also impact on the way they make choices while still being in the country. Stochastic shocks may also affect the choice of temporariness itself. Choice of temporariness itself is a process which may depend on preferences, and these preferences are also subjected to random shocks. I can tell you that I thought when I arrived in the UK, given the quality of food we had at the time, that I will not survive longer than 2 years. And I'm still in that country. To some extent, I probably have adapted to some of their food products. Now, so this much more complex system which we get on that slide is something I will talk about in the second part of my talk. That's something we have been working on for quite some time, trying to model that and trying to model human capital investment, consumption of immigrants in the presence of, out-migration and stochastics which affect preferences as well as outcomes. Before I do that, let me just give you a much simpler example. What we have here are two graphs from two surveys which ask individuals how long they intend to stay in the country to which they have emigrated. One is the new U.S. immigrant survey. Not sure it's so new anymore, but at some point it was new. The other one is the German socioeconomic panel, and what you see here is an inverse U-shaped relationship between the share of individuals who intend to stay permanently in the U.S. and their education. Now, suppose you are interested in some behavioral relationship between some outcome and education. However, what you don't observe is the planned return time of individuals. You don't know whether that individual you are looking at wants to return earlier or wants to stay in the U.S. For a longer period. Suppose now this planned return is affecting the outcome, for instance, through investment decisions, as I have pointed out before, and it also affects the education level the individual has, maybe because of unobserved fixed effects, or maybe because some of the education is attained in the country to which individuals have emigrated, then it's completely clear that the parameter B will not be consistently estimated if we don't have information on this unobservable characteristic, which is the intention or the idea about immigrants, about how long they would like to remain in the country. What I want to do in the remaining talk now is to talk a little bit how we can model the temporariness of migrations. And I will do that in a very simple framework, a deterministic framework. I will talk within that framework about different reasons why immigrants may want to return. I want to talk about possible extensions of that framework into various directions. And then I want to extend of one on one particular extension of that model, which is a more structural model about out-migration, immigrants' profiles of career profiles, and immigrant selection. And I will focus on two issues which are dominant. One is dominant in the literature, and the other is dominant for policy purposes. The first one is the estimation of earnings profiles and how we should think about the estimation of earnings profiles if immigrant out-migration is actually a choice process which interacts with other decisions immigrants may make over their life cycle. And then I will talk a little bit about immigration policies. Let me just see whether I kind of get the time here. Okay. So let's just look at a very general and very simple framework. Suppose human capital in location L, and we have two locations here, the destination and the origin, is given by the price of human capital or the rate of return the rate of return to skills and the level of skill. Skills in this very simple model, and I will extend it a little bit later, are accumulated in a very mechanic way. So basically in the same way we think about skill accumulation in a simple Mincer wage equation. Every period the individual lives increases the level of skills. Now, skills, however, accumulate differently whether the individual spends time in the destination country or in the host country. And the parameter which governs that is theta L. Theta may be different in the host country and from the destination country. So that characterizes, for instance, a very important reason for student migration. Students migrate and acquire skills, for instance, in the US or in the UK because the process of skill accumulation is faster in these countries. Earnings is then given by the exponent of the log rental rate for human capital in a particular country plus the rate of return to skills times the level of skills. Now, the two parameters which are important here and which may differ between the two countries are in the aggregate the location of the earnings distribution and the spread of the earnings distribution. So that's the level of earnings and individual phases when going to a particular country, typically depending on technology, and the log rental rate for human capital, so that's the return to skills in a particular country. Very often in the migration context, we think about the distribution of earnings being shifted to the right in the immigration country, but sometimes the rate of return to skills being higher in the origin country. In a paper by Chikia and Hansen, that's the way they thought about it, for instance, when they looked at U.S. Mexican migration. So at the beginning of every period, migrants will decide whether to return or to stay in the host country. So the value function is then given by the discounted values of those decisions. Depending on which value function is higher, the migrant will either stay or the migrant will return. In this very simple framework, we assume that a return is an absorbing state. Once you have returned, you can not come back. The value of being in the destination country is the outcome of a simple maximization problem. Let me just draw your attention to some interesting parameters here. So one parameter is pi, which is influencing the utility individuals have from consumption in one country versus another country. That may reflect the fact that individuals may prefer to consume in one country versus another country, plus then the discounted value of all future decisions. The budget constraint is very standard. The value of being in the destination country or the value of having returned to the country of origin is given by a similar relationship, and the parameter X will translate any kind of savings individuals have accumulated into the purchasing power of that country where individuals are coming from. For instance, immigrants who emigrated early on from Poland to the UK for the UK pound could buy much more in Poland than it could actually buy in the UK. That would be reflected by this parameter X. The optimal return time is then given by the intersection of or the equilibrium condition is for return is that the current utility gain from returning this period must be equal to the future gain from staying one more period in the host country. If the current utility gain from returning this period will be larger than the future gain from staying one more period, at period zero, migration will not take place. If the opposite is the case, migration will be permanent, and everything in between will result in a temporary migration. What generates a return migration? Well, we can think about a number of reasons. First of all, of course, preferences for consumption. It could well be that individuals would want to consume in their home country, but while earnings are much higher, can be easier accumulated in the host country. So they migrate, they come then back and consume for the rest of their lives at home. Purchasing power differentials are certainly very important. If for the same amount of time you can accumulate a larger bundle of consumption, potential consumption in the host country, but only if you actually spend your money back in the home country, then that may lead to a migration followed by a return migration. We can have differential skill accumulation. As I said earlier, this characterizes many migrations of students, for instance. We can have different rental rates and returns to skills in those two countries. If we look at some examples here, so the optimal return time, for instance, if we have preferences for consumption being such that individuals would like to consume in the home country, but the price for skills is higher in the host country, well, then you get those profiles. The blue profile will cut the red profile at the point where a return migration will take place. In the white graph, I have drawn consumption and income. Consumption will be first lower, so individuals will save, and then upon return will actually desave. That's a classical way many people have thought about migrations. Immigrants accumulate savings and then desave upon return. We can think about other motives. In the lower graph, we have a situation where the earnings distribution in the host country is shifted to the right, but the spread of the earnings distribution is wider in the home country. So given that human capital accumulation here is pretty mechanic, there may be a reason to return after individuals have accumulated a substantial fraction of human capital. Now, this model can now be extended, and I will spend the rest of my talk on an extension, but let me talk about various extensions we can have of that very simple model into various directions. So we could introduce, for instance, borrowing constraints and self-employment, something which is very important for many Asian migrations, where we have credit constraints. Individuals would like to become self-employed because lifetime is finite. It would take them too long in their home countries to accumulate the necessary capital. So they emigrate to do that faster, and then they return to found and start their business. Repeat or circular migration can be simply implemented in this model, and some people have done that by simply assuming that staying an increasingly longer time in the host country, the cost of staying there are increasing with increasing returns, in a convex way, which gives rise to migrations where migrants interrupt their migration to go home, then come back, and then go home, and then come back, etc., etc. So if you have children, for instance, or if there are important reasons and family ties for you to come back, then this may be a good model to do that. Chinese migration, I think, from the rural to the urban areas is a very typical case where we have these increasing costs of staying in the cities because your children are usually left home. Border controls can be implemented. We can implement a family context, and we can most importantly implement and introduce stochastics to this model. Now, that's the extensions I would like to talk about in the second part of my talk, and then come back to the initial example I gave you on the estimation of earnings equations. So let's think now about an extension of this base model, where we have basically individuals deciding about labor supply. Because they decide about labor supply, they accumulate endogenously human capital in terms of experience capital. We have unobserved heterogeneity in this model and different types of unobserved heterogeneity along preferences and along ability. And we have stochastic shocks to preferences and stochastic shocks to earnings. That gives us a dynamic life cycle model where migrants will decide in every period about their labor market status, about their consumption, about their investment in human capital, and whether they should return to their home country. And we extend the concept of human capital by introducing a second type of human capital. We call that human capital, first of all, work experience, which is accumulated in an Eckstein-Wolpin type of way, and then social capital. We didn't come up with a better idea, so we call it social capital, which is a form of human capital, which is on the one side earnings effective, so it has an impact on your earnings situation, but on the other side, it also enters your utility function. So what that would include, for instance, is communication skills, is networking, is understanding the host country and the optimal location of jobs, investment in the country where you decided to emigrate to. Those investments are costly, and the way we have modeled the costs are that they are costly in terms of utility costs. So this model, as I said, allows for heterogeneity in ability as well as in preferences towards the host country. And the way we think about that is that there is a bivariate distribution with two mass points in this very simple example for ability and one for preferences. But preferences are also due to random shocks. So preferences are very persistent over time, but they follow a Markov process and may change over time. So you get preference shocks. That was my food shock, in a way, in the UK. So the belief on durations of stay at any point in time will then be key to understand decisions of individuals, how much and whether to invest in human capital, how to consume, and how much labor to supply to the market. And that is very important. It's not the duration which we observe in data, the duration of individuals about how long they have exposed, stayed in a particular country, but it's the duration they would want that's the optimal duration which they consider optimal at a particular point in their migration cycle. And that duration can change over time. Yeah, so changes because you get shocks to preferences, you get shocks to outcomes. You may re-optimize, and you may re-optimize that duration. But that duration is what determines important investment decisions. How much you invest in human capital, how much you invest in labor market participation at a particular point in time, how much you consume, how much you save, etc. So it's a dynamic, very, very important dynamic component. Now, work experience, as I said, just let me formalize that a little bit. It's basically all set. Now in this model is a choice variable. If you work, you accumulate experience. If you don't work, you don't accumulate experience. Social capital is accumulated in a Ben Porat way. You make this decision to invest in human capital, and the cost of that investment we model as a utility cost. I will not talk about that in too much detail here. The log wages are then given by a log wage equation, which is determined by the unobserved productivity of individuals, the earnings profile with respect to work experience, the stock of social capital which has been accumulated, and the last parameter is a shift parameter, which shifts the profile downwards when you go back to your home country, something we are estimating as well. So individual heterogeneity is in preferences for the host country as well as in ability. So the dynamic specification of the model means that in every period, individuals will choose how much to consume. They will choose their labor supply. They will choose whether to invest in social capital and whether they want to change location. Once they have decided to return to their home country, as I said earlier, that's an absorbing state, so that decision is final, but that can be very easily relaxed. Important here is the intended duration of stay. So it's very important to get that in data if you want to estimate a model like that, and it's also very important how you implement that in that particular model. So we observe in the data we will be using, we have a panel of immigrants where at every point in time we observe the extended, we observe the expected length of stay in that survey. The way we model that in the model is actually a pretty complex object. So we compute in the model from basically for each individual the conditional distribution of future durations. By having the individual optimizing over the sequence of possible shocks to preferences and to earnings over their future. So that creates a distribution of future durations. We compute the median of that distribution and match that median to that particular intended duration of that particular individual in the data. And we minimize that distance. So that's how we kind of get that information into the model. The social capital is that's very simple. So we extract a common factor from information on communication skills, on indicators of integration, on reading newspapers, and language fluency. The data is from the GSERP, which is still the only data set which contains information which is required for this type of analysis. We restrict our attention to a very homogeneous sample of individuals who all came from Turkey after 1961 and who are 16 years old or older and all relatively unskilled. So now let's turn this on. So what we do is we estimate that model, we estimate the parameters of the model, and we then simulate data from that model. And with that simulated data, we can then answer questions like, okay, what happens if we have earnings profiles? What happens if we want to estimate earnings profiles in the presence of return migration? And what mistakes may we make if we estimate such earnings profiles? So usually in data, you start with estimation of earnings profiles and then induce from those estimated parameters the type of selection you may have of the immigrant cohorts you are modeling. We are doing that here the other way around. So what I have in this graph here is the survival of different types of immigrants. And from now onwards, I will distinguish between four different types. So we have two preference types, and these preferences are the preferences which individuals draw upon immigration. So they may be of high preference for the host country or of low preference for the host country. And they may be of high ability or of low ability. So what we find is, first of all, that high preference individuals will stay longer. That is not very surprising. So the two lower lines, the reddish line and the dotted line, are lower preference individuals. The higher lines are high preference individuals. So high preference individuals stay longer in the country. So those who get a positive shock with respect to preferences for the host country will stay longer. Low productivity individuals stay longer than high productivity individuals. So high productivity individuals will return earlier. And the reason why they return earlier is actually because the income effect from spending more time back in the home country is larger than the substitution effect, which is the opportunity cost from staying in the host country. Yeah? So you get actually positive selection. The better ones return earlier. However, this is not the only selection. There is a second selection, which is those with a high preference stay longer. So you see, that in this graph. So these two types of selection are going in different directions if it comes to the estimation of earnings profiles, because the high preference individuals would want to stay longer. Because they want to stay longer, they will also invest more in human capital, while the high productivity individuals will stay less long, but they will be on a higher earnings profile because they are higher productivity. So let's look at that a little bit more in detail by simulating the earnings profiles. Before we do that, let's simulate the accumulation of social capital, which is earnings effective. And that's done in this graph here. So high preference individuals, even if they are low productivity, will accumulate more social capital. And the reason is that they condition initially on a longer period in the host country. Now let's turn, before I kind of show you the graphs, let me kind of make this point again. So selection of immigrants through return migration has actually two distinct sources. So the first source is migrants select according to fixed productivity differences. High productivity individuals return earlier. Secondly, migrants accumulate human capital at different rates according to the expected duration, which here is reflected by the initial preference shock they get, which leads to a selection which we call behavioral selection. So that's a selection which makes immigrants return earlier who are on lower earnings profiles because they don't want to stay for so long in the country. But of course, in the absence of any information of that, in reduced form analysis, you will mix up those two components. And I will show you to that. I will show you that in a minute. So what are the implications for the estimation of earnings profiles? Well, I have drawn here four different earnings profiles, which correspond to the four types we're distinguishing: high preference individuals, low productivity; high preference individuals, high productivity; low preference individuals, low productivity; and low preference individuals, high productivity. So the positive selection of... So let's first look at low preference, high productivity individuals, and low preference, low productivity individuals. The two red lines stop at the median of the optimal duration chosen by these immigrant groups. And what you see is that the low preference, high productivity individuals are returning earlier than the low preference, low productivity individuals. That's the income effect I have just pointed out. So that kind of is the classical selection we have in mind. Selection based on unobserved productivity components which do not change over the life cycle. So what happens with respect to the estimation of earnings profiles, just isolating out that selection? Well, we will get a classical downward bias in earnings profiles, because individuals who are lower productivity will stay longer. Okay. Now, then there is the second type of selection. Let's come back to that. What I've drawn here with the two blue lines are low productivity individuals with high preference and with low preference. In the upper graph, we have high ability individuals with high preference and low preference. So what you see here is that the earnings profile of high preference individuals is steeper, and these individuals tend to stay longer in the country than low preference individuals. So the implication for the estimation of earnings profiles is that this second type of selection will lead to an upward bias in the age earnings profile, which is what we call a behavioral selection. And if you put those two together, you will actually not be able to sign ex ante the bias you get in the estimation of earnings profiles. Now, we could do what much of the literature has done, and that is eliminating the level difference between these two sets of lines, the dotted lines and the solid lines, by conditioning on fixed effects. So we would eliminate the classical productivity difference. But we would still be left with behavioral selection. And that behavioral selection would still lead to an upward bias of the earnings profiles. Now, these two types of selection are not only working in different directions, and this is basically the direction we have based on the data on which we have estimated the model. So with other data, selection may go in other directions. But they are also non-monotonic. And in order to demonstrate that to you, what I have drawn here is the earnings profiles of different immigrant groups. So the first one are those who stay between 10 and 20 years. The second one are those who stay between 20 and 30 years. So that is flatter. The first profile are those who are high productivity. The second one is a mixture between low and high productivity and low and high preferences, as is the third one. But the fourth one are those who stay permanently, and those are high productivity. They may be low ability, but they are high productivity and they invest a lot in their human capital, so that profile is steeper again. So we have non-monotonous profiles according to the optimal duration of stay chosen by these different immigrant groups. Okay, let me spend some minutes on policy. Now, the challenge for policymakers is to actually please two camps. The one camp is industry, is business, people who need migrants as labor, and they tend to be pro-migration because immigrants are important to keep their businesses going. The other camp are people who are afraid of immigrants. Whether there is a reason for that or there is no reason for that doesn't really matter. They don't like immigrants in too large numbers because they fear for, various things. So the policymaker has to balance the industry interests with the interests of those who are actually voting for him in the next election. And those are people who do not want perhaps too much migration. And that's very challenging. So what we have seen in the past and what we are seeing currently are always new ideas to kind of have a solution to that. And the solution which has been implemented many times is to have a temporary migration scheme. We say, okay, we take immigrants, we keep them for some time, that pleases industry, but then we send them home so you don't have to worry about them. We know that these schemes, in most cases, are not very successful because in industrialized modern democracies, to send people home when the pictures are in the newspapers with their children who have to leave school, etc., is something very, very difficult to implement. But these migration schemes, of course, affect a very important part of the decision problem of immigrants, which is the choice of temporariness. So whenever we impose some restrictions on temporariness, we interfere in that particular problem of lifetime maximization of immigrants. And that may affect behavior along all types of dimensions, and it may have very unintended consequences for immigrant behavior and also for the receiving country. So let me just give you one example here. And let's look at one scheme which is popular in many countries and in particular also in the UK. So in the UK, if you are coming from a non-European country and you work for 5 years, then after 5 years, you perhaps get permanent residency. Before that point, you don't get permanent residency. So 5 years is the point when a decision is made about your permanent residency. At the moment, let's just assume that is unconditional. What we have in the UK now is that scheme is made conditional. For instance, it will depend now on how much you earn after 5 years. So that can be simply extended in those directions, and the implications are then slightly different. But let's assume that's unconditional. And let's assume that we have a cohort of immigrants who all arrive at age 20 and who observe the odds of being granted permanence after 5 years. So after 5 years, they get permanence and they observe the probability with which that will happen. And let's look at two situations here, a factual situation and a counterfactual situation. The counterfactual situation is they can freely choose how long they want to stay. The factual situation are the different odds they observe upon entry to the country, 10%, 20%, 30%, so the probability of being granted a permanent residence. So clearly, we have seen that the part of human capital, which we called social capital, increases quite dramatically very early on in the migration history. So if you are not sure whether you can stay permanently, you will reduce that investment in human capital. So that will lead to a lower accumulation in human capital, and for the particular example here, for the particular data on which we have estimated the model, up to 60% probability that you can stay permanently, human capital you accumulate, and that is for those who would stay longer if they are not granted residency compared to those. Okay, so those who get residency and would stay longer. For those individuals who don't want to stay longer than 5 years, that's not a binding constraint. Yeah, so we look here only at individuals for which that is actually a binding constraint. For those individuals, human capital investment will decrease by about 10%. That, of course, will have an impact on earnings. So the discounted mean cumulative wage loss would be, for this particular example, about 58,000 euro for if the odds are about 60% of getting permanent residency. Now, the unintended consequences are that, well, the first paper by Barry Shispig and the work by George Borchers, of course, had also a very important political reason. It was very important to understand how immigrants are doing in terms of earnings, because the better you do in terms of earnings, the more taxes you can pay and the more contribution you can make. So if human capital investment is reduced, individuals will be on flat earnings profiles, and that will lead possibly to a reduction in tax revenues. And what we have done here is we have taken those numbers here and we have just looked at VAT and income tax, and that leads over the life cycle of an immigrant to a reduction in fiscal revenues of about 20,000 euros. So that is just one example. We can now extend that into various directions. But it demonstrates that meddling around with parts of the decision problem, and in particular with a very important part, which is about how long an individual would want to stay in the country, may affect the decision process and outcomes in very important ways, and therefore have consequences from the perspective of the host country which are unintended. Of course, there is a welfare loss for immigrants, but usually that's not something people care too much about, because that's why I don't have the slide here. But there is also a loss for the receiving country for this particular example. There could be other policies. For instance, if we connect the policy to the optimal, to a particular earnings target they have to achieve, the selection could go in the other direction.
Yeah.
So decreasing probability of receiving a residence permit has therefore persistent impacts on, or may have persistent impacts on outcomes. It may also affect the type of immigrants a country can attract. Because of the complementarities of productivity and human capital investment, which depends on how long you can actually stay in the country, if there are restrictions or if there are probabilities of not getting permanence, then that may already affect the selection of immigrants who actually arrive in the country. Now, we don't know the distribution of earnings in the origin country, but what we can say from the data we have here is that in our case, uncertainty about being granted residency will render migration less attractive to high-ability immigrants relative to lower-ability immigrants. And that has to do with the complementarities in the production function of human capital. Well, let me conclude. Immigrants' life cycle decisions are more complex, much more complex than those of natives, which has to do with their return intentions and return expectations interacting with all types of economic decisions. That has important implications for all aspects of analysis of migration. So here I spoke only about one area of migration research, which is trying to understand the career profiles of immigrants. But the career profiles of immigrants, in a dynamic way, of course, also affect or create labor supply shocks or labor demand shocks, and therefore create dynamics in the labor market which may affect native wages. And that may be very much related to the temporariness of migration as well. It has important and possibly unforeseen consequences for migration policies, and I believe that to design optimal migration policies, we need to understand the complexities of immigrants' decision-making. And temporariness is a very important aspect of this. Thank you very much.
We have time for some questions, I think. Well, good crowd here. We'll try to get the microphone to whoever would like to ask a question. So, yeah, Ed.
Christian, at the beginning you showed a picture that had an inverted U-shaped relationship between education and length of time that you stayed in the country. You also talked about the relation of productivity to length of time that you stayed in the country, and I didn't quite follow how you could get the inverted U from that connection. I assume that had something to do with a feedback mechanism and investment in education, but I didn't quite see it. I wonder if you could explain that.
Yeah, so I was thinking this morning whether I should include that slide. It's perhaps a little bit confusing. The answer is simply it had nothing to do with what I was talking about later. So the only point I wanted to make is that, well, there is something which we usually don't observe about immigrants, and that is their idea about how long they actually want to stay. Now, that may be affecting outcomes, and there are many examples, as I have given you, how that could be, but it may also affect variables which we usually use as regressors, and education is a very important one. And this inverted U-shape relationship between the share of individuals who would like to stay permanently and education is kind of a neat way to demonstrate this relationship and to show if there is a correlation between that particular variable and education, as well as between that variable and the outcome variable. Then, of course, we have a problem in estimation. We have an omitted variable problem. So that was the only reason I mentioned that. The out-migration according to ability, that is... The way that comes about is through an income effect. So here we have a utility function. This is a model which doesn't have only income maximizers, but it has individuals who maximize utility over the life cycle. So we get a classical substitution and income effect where the time back in the home country is actually a good which individuals consume, and that leads to the type of selection we have here in the data.
One issue about the counterfactual analysis that you showed us, changing the residence permits, is that it will also affect the initial immigration decision. So it's going to change the distribution of the types, four types that you showed us. So would there be some way of incorporating the initial immigration decision within the model so that we can allow for the changing distribution of types?
Okay, I start to understand John Mark's problem at lunchtime. It's incredibly difficult to hear with that. Mike, I think the thing is going in this direction,
yeah.
So you can...
Does this work?
I think this is...
Come down here and use this. Does this microphone work? Come down here and you'll be able to hear the question if you stand in front of the speaker.
Okay, so this is what we should do in the future. So, can you repeat your question?
Okay, the issue about the counterfactual analysis is that it's not only going to change the return migration decision, but it's also going to change the distribution of the four types in the population through the immigration decision. But there's no initial immigration decision. So would it be possible to extend this model?
Oh, yeah, I understand, yeah. So clearly, this is very partial, and you're perfectly right. So if we implement such a policy, we should do that in a much more general equilibrium model where we definitely also consider the out-migration decision. We have not done that here. So this is just a simulation at the end of the paper to show the possible... implications this actually also may have for the selection of incoming immigrants, which is of great concern to all types of at all types of policy fronts and to destination countries in more general terms. But you are right. So in order to model that properly, in order to really say something about selection, which we cannot do here neither, the only thing we can say here is that in this very partial analysis, the return... this policy is considered as more detrimental for high-ability individuals than for low-ability individuals, because we don't know the earnings distribution in the origin countries. We cannot actually say anything about selection. Yeah, but that could be clearly an extension, which would be worthwhile.
Anyone else? I know it's the end of the second day. Well, okay. Christian, we thank you very much for a wonderful talk.